And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Thursday, May 15th, 1:06 in the afternoon. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel, and we've got finally... We've been touting it, and finally we've got some thunderstorms that are pressing into the Fargo area. In fact, we've been getting some heavy rain over the last couple of hours, stretching from about Kindred through Enderlin and up to the Tower City area, some moderate to heavy rain stretching out towards Jamestown. Now, the National Weather Service just issued a tornado watch for areas just to the southeast of the FM area. That does include areas from about Fergus through Perham and out towards Brainerd and south towards the cities. And that goes through 8 o'clock tonight. So we could have some strong storms close to the FM area, mainly Lakes Country and points southward. Main threat is going to be large hail damaging winds. But again, we can't rule out an isolated tornado the further south you go of Lakes Country. Already, just south of Perham, some 3-inch limbs being reported down due to high winds out ahead of some of these thunderstorms that are moving in from Lakes Country. I had a couple people ask me, why is the weather moving from the southeast to the northwest? And there's a strong area of low pressure out in northeastern South Dakota, and everything rotates counterclockwise around that area of low pressure. So that's why normally weather moves from west to east, northwest to southeast. Occasionally, you'll get these weird movements. So look for those showers and thunderstorms coming in from the south and southeast as we head throughout the afternoon, and occasionally heavy rain. But the heaviest rain looks like it's going to fall to the east, or to the west, I should say, of the FM area, out towards Valley City, Jamestown, Bismarck, and north of there, where some of those areas could get 2-3 inches of rainfall out of this. While here in the Valley, Bridget, and east into Lakes Country, probably 1/2 inch to 3/4 before all is said and done. Something's better than nothing, but we were hoping a little closer to the inch totals here in the FM area, but it looks like as that system parks over us tomorrow, we're going to see dry air, and that'll choke off the precip for the first half of the day tomorrow before more wraps in behind it. So we'll keep an eye on severe reports, possibility of severe weather later this afternoon, Lakes Country and southward. If you're traveling down to the cities, keep that in mind.
You also have the opportunity for more rainfall next week with the next rain shower band that might move through here. That might help us out instead of just our 1/2 to 3/4 inch in this region. We'll take more of it. Now, as you listen to what Dean was saying about heavier rainfall to the west, I've had multiple reports from north central South Dakota, as well as into central North Dakota, anywhere from 2.3 to 3 inches of rain. So they definitely are seeing more even already. That was as of this morning. Some of those areas were picking up heavier rainfall. Great thing. I know that there are those who are still working in advance to finish some planting, or if the wind is down, to get some spraying done before the rain gets to you, but we'll all take it as soon as it arrives. That seems to be the plan.
No doubt about it. And we've got a couple of guests on our show today. We're going to start them off a little earlier than we normally do.
We do. We have an intro for On the Auction Block with Max Steffes. Do you want to debut that for us, Addison? Are you prepared?
Come on.
Well, that's okay.
Come on, Addison.
I was not ready for this yet. No.
Well, we can always do it as we end with Max today. But Max Steffes with Steffes Group, hey, how are you today?
I'm good. Is it Leroy Van Dyke or what is it?
No, it's your
you got
very
me curious
own,
now.
It's your very own Brad. When he was in the studio last time, we had him do the auctioneer's chant for us.
Oh,
so
man.
Use that
all
to
right.
our advantage.
I like it. I like
he
it.
He was kind enough to sell us a 40/20 and used a bidder number of 970. So the guy knows how to move a sale.
Nice. Nice. Now we got our intro music. We got our bumper music, as they call it in the industry.
There you go.
That's right. Go ahead, Dave.
So Max, you know, a lot of fields here are tiled. Some are, some aren't. On the auction block, are you going to get more generally for a field that's tiled than isn't? And if so, how much more?
Short answer is yes, absolutely. You know, tile came into the valley probably 25 years ago, and it really became prevalent about 10 years ago. So there hasn't been a lot of tiled land that is transacted.
Okay.
Because as you know, farmland doesn't typically trade hands very often. But
right.
the parcels and the tracts of land that we have sold that have been tiled have definitely, the sellers have at least recouped the cost of installing the tile, and in some cases, a premium over that. And I guess it would depend on the tract of land and how that tile has responded, or the land has responded to the tile, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, the better it's responded, the more it's improved the land, the more it's improved yields. That's a bankable difference, and you know, it could be substantially more than what's invested in tile. So long and short, it's a good investment. You're okay. Welcome, Ellingson, and all my other friends in
right.
the drain tile business.
I think I just heard them nod, yes.
Yeah.
And you've added author to your list of great things that you do, Max, because you mentioned that you're now writing for Dakota Farmer.
Yeah, I do a monthly column for them, and I share those on LinkedIn, and kind of nice to sharpen the pencil once a month and come up with topic ideas that may or may not be interesting to landowners and bankers and attorneys and farmers.
So as we build off of what Dean asked about tiling and how that can improve an overall productivity rating plus a sales point on a piece of land, you wrote an article back a couple months ago talking about the cost of conservation easements and how that could affect a land value. And so the long and the short of it is, yes, it can, correct? And do you want to give a little more depth as to what was in your article in that regard?
Yeah, so that's been something that's had a lot of buzz lately because there's some traction about possibly getting some of those eliminated or at least having a buyout option. So here in the Prairie Pothole region of the Dakotas, we have what's called the U.S. Fish and Wildlife wetland easements, and there's two types of easements that that service sells. There's the wetland easements, and there's also the grassland easements, and both are perpetual. So they start 99 years starting tomorrow. And oftentimes those were sold in the 70s and 80s for at the time was a lot of money. We're talking, you know, in some cases $1,500 for a whole quarter of land. And that really encumbers the land. What that says is you can't ever drain, burn, or fill the delineated wetlands that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service determines on their wetland map. So that pretty much excludes you from doing any ditching in those areas and also any tiling. There are some workarounds there with some setbacks and stuff, but generally speaking, people don't tile quarters or half sections of land that have those U.S. Fish and Wildlife easements on it. So it certainly adversely affects the outcome of our auction sales when we do have those easements on. The degree of which depends, of course. If there's a quarter of land that we're selling that has an easement on it, and if it didn't have that easement on it, a guy would be able to tile it and make a lot more tillable acres out of it. Obviously, that's going to hurt it more than a piece where, you know, you got a quarter of land that's wet and there's nowhere for the water to go. Well, the easement probably isn't going to adversely affect it quite as much. So it really depends on the condition of the land.
Well, condition of the land matters so tremendously. Just in its productivity as well. I had a conversation with a farmer last night about salinity, and he's going to try a product that says it can help reduce the salinity. And I said, I'm very curious because a piece of land gets sold saying X amount of tillable acres. It doesn't get sold saying this amount, you know, 80% of these acres are much better producing than this amount. So, you know, we got to figure out a balance there. And if we can try to do any of those land improvements, whether it's through tiling, knowing those easements, et cetera, that's going to make a difference to the purchaser as well as the seller in the long run.
For sure. Yeah.
As you were.
And it all comes down
ahead,
to what you can. Yeah, sure. It all goes back to what you can, you know, grow off that quarter section of land. And if you can grow some more bushels or some more acres, obviously that's going to improve the bottom line.
So as a guy who's in the auction business and you're helping keep an eye on the values, et cetera, this is kind of twofold. Are you appraising land as well, or is that a separate function of your business? And with the potential rollback of situations like WOTUS, Waters of the U.S., are you paying a lot of attention to that, and is that affecting anything you see auction-wise lately?
Yeah, so first and foremost, the appraisal side of things, that's a totally separate discipline, and we are not certified licensed real estate appraisers. There's all sorts of professionals out there that do that. We do provide broker price opinions and market analyses. Those are a little bit different. They're more informal, I would say, but the appraisal side of things is done by a separate a group of professionals, and we don't practice that. And in terms of WOTUS and stuff, and honestly, this U.S. Fish and Wildlife thing, it's hard to keep up with a lot of that because it moves so quickly, but we're definitely paying attention to it. And once that stuff is inked and, you know, seeing how that might impact the farmland business.
Well, I have a feeling a lot of things affect that farmland business, Max.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And, Max, are there any industrial commercial properties you'd like to highlight here that are getting ready to go up for auction?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we're kind of coming to the end of our farmland selling season. Most farms are sold after the crop has been harvested and before it's planted. So a lot of guys here in Cass County and up and down the valley are wrapping up with that process. So June isn't typically very busy with auction activity, but we do have some auctions to highlight for June. We're going to be selling the elevator in Felton. That's an interesting one. That's a product of the acquisition of West Central by CHS, so assets that they don't need. They're also selling a facility in Park Rapids, a nice shop business for you lake folks that are looking for a place to park that Ranger or maybe got some hunting gear. It's a wonderful little facility there in Park Rapids. So those are both in June. And then looking ahead to the fall, September is really when the auction activity heats up again. In Steele County, we're going to be selling 924 acres for Mark Johnson just north of Laverne. In November, we've got that Niesemeyer land be south of Castleton on 18.
I know where both those are, so I'm going to pay close attention to those and watch how things progress as we get to September.
Yeah.
So, Max, our conversation today has sparked a list of questions for me to ask you the next time you come. And when you do, on the auction block, that you'll be back with us in June. Actually, Brad Olstead will be joining us yet in May, and we'll be talking to him in 2 weeks. And we'll have your bumper music ready.
You'll I was just going to say, you better have his bumper. Hopefully he doesn't get a big head.
We'll see what we can do for him. So,
thanks,
folks,
Bridget.
Don't go anywhere. We want to catch up. Livestock Markets, thank you, Max. And we're going to be back shortly.
And welcome back to Weather Nag and Focus on this Thursday afternoon. Skies are turning dark around the FM area. We've got a lot of wind, some thunderstorms, some reports of some, half-inch, quarter to half-inch size hail just outside of Sabin. And I believe we had a caller call in, and Addison, we had a report from Yulin.
Yes.
Yeah, blowing dust.
And yeah, down to half a mile of visibility out in that direction.
Okay, and that makes sense because that line of storms is lining up from, let's say New York Mills through Barnesville and now entering Fargo, and it's the winds out ahead of that that are going to cause quite a bit of blowing dust. So areas around Yulin, up towards Twin Valley, generally on the east side of the river, you're going to see those stronger winds. And again, this one line of storms that's moving through right now, producing a brief heavy rain. We'll see a break, and then we'll see additional storms. Tornado warning has just been issued south of Morris, and those storms moving due north. Nothing confirmed on the ground, but quite a bit of rotation on radar. And it's those areas down to our south from Fergus southward towards Morris and down towards the cities that is under a tornado watch for this afternoon. So it's a pretty dynamic weather system that wouldn't surprise me to spawn off a couple of tornadoes. I think the majority of this is going to be heavy rain, pea to marble size hail. The further you get into west central Minnesota from Fergus, again, down towards Alex and the cities, maybe even out as far east as Brainerd, could see some severe weather between now and 8 o'clock tonight where a tornado watch is in effect. So we'll be keeping an eye on radar. If there's any warnings issued for our area, we'll definitely break into coverage and let you know. But just in the meantime, with this line of storms coming through now, look for pea to marble size hail, brief heavy rain, and probably pick up about a tenth to a quick quarter of an inch of rain as this pushes through. So a little breaking weather there.
Well, and as folks continue to get that weather, please reach out to us on the JLA Insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. Just remember, Nate Thor's route at JLA Insurance makes insurance easy, and he'll come right out to you. The other one that will help you out, well, those markets came out today, and they read them nice and smooth. And you know what else should be smooth? Your cybersecurity and all of your on-farm technology. And that's where you find Chris Sherman with Tech Support Farm to help you out. Now, all of this rainfall, some people think, could it flood? Could we get enough? Well, you know what? Someone who can help us talk about that and how to retain those floodwaters would be Brian Feuder. He's our guest in studio today with Red River Retention Authority. Brian, for those who aren't familiar with what work your agency does, could you fill them in, please?
Yes. Thanks for having me again. Yeah, the Red River Retention Authority, I work as a joint powers act between the Red River Watershed Management Board in Minnesota, the watershed districts along the Red River Basin, and the 14 counties in North Dakota that make up the Red River Joint Watershed Resource District. And I'm working with those two organizations kind of as a coordinator, liaison at the federal level to support, identify, and seek funding for these different projects that we have going on throughout the basin that help protect and reduce our flood flows based on a proposal that was made in the long-term flood solutions a number of years ago that were looking to reduce tributary and peak flood flows of the main stem by 20% of the 1997 levels. And so we continue to do that through retention projects, which are our temporary holding facilities that mostly are off-channel. They slow water down from coming into the river all at once, and the less water coming into the river, the less water the river has to convey northward. And so that's what we continue to work at.
And Brian,
water management.
Yeah.
Because it likes to go wherever it wants.
It usually does.
Yes.
Brian, you just got back from D.C.
Yes, I did.
What was going on out there?
Well, Rob Zipp, the executive director for the Red River Watershed Management Board in Ada, him and I went out there, and we were pursuing some congressionally directed spending for four projects that are ongoing right now in the Minnesota basin. Those projects are the Nelson Slough Improvement Project up in Marshall County, Klondike Clean Water Retention Project near Lake Bronson, and the Two Rivers Watershed District, and then Roseau Lake Rehabilitation Project up near Roseau, and the Lower Wild Rice Corridor Habitat Restoration Project near Ada. Those four projects are currently under construction, and we just need to have trying to find a little extra funding so that we can bring these projects to conclusion and put them into work. You know, a half finished project is almost as good as an unfinished as no project whatsoever. So we went out there with an ask, especially our Minnesota delegates, for approximately about $28 million to bring those four projects to completion.
It's nothing I like more than a good damn project, so this is going to be a fun conversation, Brian.
Yeah.
So when you're doing this, I just noticed all four projects that you mentioned are in Minnesota. Do you feel like it alternates? Like last year we had a heavier focus in North Dakota, this year in Minnesota. Or really, we're geographically blind. We're just trying to find the right project to be taken care of at the right time.
Well, it is we've got projects ongoing all the time. Right now, Minnesota seems to be the ones that have the projects that are under construction and have been gone through the planning stage, the design stage, and now they're in the construction phase. North Dakota has kind of fallen back a little bit on these. We've gotten through the planning stages. Now we're looking at moving into the design and the construction. But as of right now, today, we're probably about 2 years out from being shovel ready for any of the projects on the North Dakota side. We do have a considerable. So this year we went out and we asked for four projects in Minnesota. Next year we may be asking for all the projects in North Dakota for funding. So we're trying to take a basin-wide approach towards our requests for funding, and understanding that it doesn't matter if you live what side of the river you live on. When the water gets high, everybody's feet get wet, and it doesn't matter who you voted for. You're going to get wet just like the guy standing next to you. So, you know, that's another thing that we take a look at, too, is that the most non-discriminatory thing that we have out there right now is floodwater. It's really tough to sell flood control projects right now. We don't have any water. We haven't had any flooding. In fact, we're probably looking more on a drought situation. And so there's things that we can also look at and try to coordinate with throughout the Red River Retention Authority to utilize some of this retention water that's out there and possibly looking at further uses for that as far as surface water storage, surface water usage. Maybe there's even some possibility that we can get some groundwater recharge through some maybe more permanent types of retention structures.
Well, that would be huge. And some of the rehabilitation projects on dams and so forth, because you and I have talked about this before, and we had a really great round of improvements and additions probably in the 60s. Mm-hmm. Now it's been a while. We got to get back to those things. And we're going to get back to that discussion right after we touch on the news. When we return, more questions for Brian. And for those who are listening, you can reach us on the JLA phone line, 701-JLA Insurance, 701-293-9000. Weather or ag at flagfamily.com is our emails. And of course, please watch along with us on YouTube and Facebook, Acres TV, Weather and Ag in Focus, or WDAY. And we'll be right back. Well, this extremely welcome rainfall is music to the ears of our Here We Grow Wheat project. Our 20 acres should be getting some rainfall right now, much needed after we planted just last week. And a big thank you to not only Brian Feuder, who's in studio with us with Red River Retention Authority, but also Progressive Ag, to Ray Grabansky and his folks who are there to help you with your risk management. We thank them for being a sponsor. And Vision Ford in Wahpeton. If you are considering trading out cars, I know a lot of people are thinking about it or looking at different pickups. Now is your time to go talk to the folks at Vision Ford. So, Brian, as I looked through the email you sent, which has your four projects on it and a little bit of a description of it, I wanted to visit about the Lower Wild Rice Corridor over at, this is near, it's in Norman County, and yep. I don't know if it's near Ada, yes. If I say Norman County, would that be fair? Okay. Yep. All right. And so tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing in that project. What it says something about habitat restoration, but does that also include rehabilitation of another structure? What's going on over there?
Well, the lower Wild Rice Corridor restoration project is really there to restore the natural corridor along the area of the Wild Rice River. There's about a 23-mile section there that was straightened at one time. And what they want to do is they want to try to put their meanders back into that, the sinuosity back into the stream channel. And by doing so, that slows that water down. It increases the surface area of the river itself. So if you increase the surface area, of course, you're going to increase the volume that it can contain. And then we can actually, you know, garner a little bit of retention through that. It'll hold back more water. It'll slow down that water from reaching its final destination, which is the Red River, and then offward to the north it goes. And so,
speaking of going northward,
yeah.
When you finish your discussion there, could you tag on as that water moves northward? Does Manitoba get involved in this discussion at all? Did you have to visit with them as this was going on?
Well, no, we don't necessarily. You know, our projects that are within the Minnesota and the North Dakota side of the Red River Basin, you know, we work with them. We also consider, we take input from our Manitoba neighbors. You know, we have also the Red River Basin Commission, which is includes the Red River Basin here in the United States and in Canada. And so we do work with those folks. We also have the International Joint Commission, the International Red River Basin Commission, those entities that are all involved in some of these things. And of course, you know, we've got a treaty agreement with Canada that water going across the border has to meet certain specifications. We are not currently in guidelines. Those are pretty strict, pretty steep, but we are always very cognizant of what we're doing and what we can do to try to improve the water that's going into Canada. You know, it's nice to think that in the spring when it's March and April and all the floodwaters are rolling through here, it's nice to flush that mess and send it into Canada as quickly as we can, but they don't necessarily appreciate it that fast either. You know, we talk about our FM diversion project here, you know, what we've got, the 32 miles of channel and all the structures that go along with that. That's located here in the Fargo-Moorhead area. You go up to Winnipeg and look at the diversion project they have up there. It's you know, probably 10, 20 times bigger than what we've got dealing here. And so their structure has been in place for many years. And as you look at that basin, you know, all the water from the Red River and its tributaries, so all the way from the South Dakota border over to the east where the Lake Agassiz shores are, to the west where the Lake Agassiz shores are, all that water's got to go through Winnipeg at some time or another. And so that's a tremendous amount of water that has to flow north. So we are very, like I said, we're very cognizant of what we're doing, and we're trying to improve water quality, trying to improve habitat access, you know, making everything better. Just because we focus in a lot on flood control and flood mitigation, we also want to take a look at some of those unintended benefits of flood water retention, such as water quality, habitat restoration, wildlife possibilities. There are also recreational capacities that increase when we have nice retention areas too. So.
And Brian, working with Canada is important. Mm-hmm. And have, with the tensions, quote unquote, on the rise, has that affected any projects at all that you know of?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
No.
Good.
We have a good working relationship with our neighbors up there. Okay. And you know, if there is something that is of a concern, you know, it's brought up. It's not like it's not like they can just say, well, no, we're going to put up a dam here and not let any water into Canada. That's not going to happen. We'd probably start throwing rocks at each other at that point, you know. But we do have a very, very nice working relationship with our neighbors up in Manitoba.
Good.
Yeah. Well, we can't just let that water. We can't just let that water find its own way, because just remember that old adage. Whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting. So we got to be careful with what we do.
And you need one to make the other. So
yeah, that's right.
So the project over in Norman County, as you were talking about, you said you're going to put some of the meandering back in. And so will this be a multi-stage project? Is this something that will be completed by end of summer 2025? What does that look like, Brian?
Well, that project there is going to be in several steps. It's already been started. And of mm-hmm. course, you know, these projects, you know, I think they're looking at, to be totally honest with you, we have three phases with here. I'm not as familiar with this project as I am with some of the other ones, but, you know, just saying.
Let's talk about the others.
Well, no, I mean, that's fine. You know, it's kind of my fault that I'm not working, you know, sticking my nose in. But when things work well, I don't have to get overly involved. And so I know that there are three phases. You know, the first phase would be the land acquisition and then the restoration of the channels. And then that second phase would be the design and setback levees. And those setback levees are berms where some of the spoil piles are placed, and that helps to, you know, kind of channelize even the overflow areas. And then, of course, that channel mm-hmm. rehabilitation, that's where we start looking at the habitat restoration of that to bring back some of those wetlands, some of those prime habitats for our local wildlife that we're looking for. So it's a very good project. You know, this is one of the probably more expensive projects, or one of our bigger asks. I think we requested roughly $10 million for congressionally directed spending for that project alone, because it is, you know, 23 miles. It takes a lot of work to cover 23 miles, and a lot of material can be moved, and a lot of material has to be placed, and the excavations and things like that are all very cumbersome, and it just has to be done in phases. And you know, we expect that it won't probably be completely finished this year, but they're hoping to get a good chunk of it out of there.
So when you think about the projects that you work with, I don't know that you can just generalize, but would you say that the majority of dollars spent on the projects you're working with are more federal versus state? Although I'm sure it varies greatly depending on which project it is.
Yes, that's absolutely right. You know, we do see there's a lot of local dollars that go into these projects through the Red Board in Minnesota or the Joint Board in North Dakota. They do fund a considerable amount of those projects. The local taxpayers are paying for those projects to an extent. We also go to state funding for a lot of these things. through the in Minnesota would be the DNR and those entities like that. North Dakota, we work a little bit more tightly in some of the areas, but North Dakota, the State Water Commission, Department of Water Resources supplies some funding for these things. And then we work with NRCS at the national level to bring in a lot of the planning, the design work, and then we actually start picking up some of the construction costs there. So it really does. It depends on the project. What is the overall goal of that project? And if we have, you know, different varying goals for those projects, you know, we look at different funding sources. If it's something that's a little bit more higher water quality issue, you know, we'll go to different agencies that are more interested in water quality. If it's more of a, you know, involves more habitat, then we'll talk to those agencies that are interested in habitat. If it's basically flood control, flood mitigation, then, of course, you know, definitely we're going to talk to those folks too.
This is a kind of a never-ending data gathering situation for you to make sure everybody's involved in getting what needs to be done.
Yes, yeah, that's correct. And you know, when we look across, you know, the size of the Red River Basin and the projects, the number of tributaries that we're dealing with, yeah, it's an ongoing process. It never ends. Somebody has said, well, when are we going to get this flooding cured in the Red River Basin? That'll never happen. There's no cure for flooding in the Red River Basin because we don't know what Mother Nature is going to throw at us. You know, we could be what starts off as a nice little rain in the middle of May could turn into a potential or torrential downpour, and pretty soon we've got flooding issues. The spring of the year, you know, we saw very, very little water in our spring runoff this year compared to other years.
Yeah.
You look back in the last 20 years, how many times have we had springtime flooding?
Right.
Maybe not completely basin-wide, but over large portions of the basin. So we just don't know what Mother Nature is going to throw at us next. So we're always trying to figure out what can we do to try to stay, or if we even can. And maybe we're fooling ourselves thinking we can stay a step ahead. But, you know, flooding is an issue. Then we also, again, we have to look at water supply. Water is in a limited quantity that's available here for usage. And so I think we have to be proactive in looking on what we can do to augment water supply issues here in the basin, too. It's going to limit what can be done as far as agricultural needs. It can limit mm-hmm. what's going to be done with industrial development here in the basin. And so we have to take those into consideration also. So people say, well, gee, I thought you guys were talking about floods, and now you're talking about droughts. Well, we deal with both. Yeah, so yeah. We have to work with both entities.
And odds are next year, I mean, we've had back-to-back years where we've had hardly any snow in the winter, which leads to less and less runoff. Odds are next year, boy, it's tough to get 3 years in a row like that. So fingers crossed that's not the case next year.
I thought they always said things always happen in threes.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
We can always hold. Yeah.
Brian, thank you. You are always a wealth of information and help to us when you come in. Where can folks find more from you?
Well, you can find information from me from our website, Red River Retention Agent, our Red River Retention Authority at redriverretentionauthority.net. You can contact us at my phone number, 701-640-8985. I'm willing and always looking forward to talk to people about their flood issues. We are also going to be looking at doing some community outreach here along the basin is what we are currently working on right now, hopefully yet for this summer. So stay attuned to hear more information on those as those develop. And just feel free to reach out to us anytime you want.
Well, I tell you what, I'm already typing in a list of topics for the next time you come and join us, so okay. We won't be slowing down. All right. Thanks, Brian. Really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
You bet.
Well, when we come back, we're going to update you on the weather. There are some active warnings in effect south of the FM area, south of Lakes Country, if you're doing any traveling down there. We'll detail that and let you know what the rest of the afternoon looks like, and we'll hit a couple of ag topics as well, all when we come back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. I want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon. We've had a couple waves of showers and storms moving through the area. That heavier band that just passed through the FM area now pushing northward up towards Hillsboro, out through Cooperstown, and up towards Mayville. That stretches out just north of DL. Now, we've got another band of severe thunderstorms developing. In fact, a tornado warning is in effect east and southeast of Morris. There have been confirmed reports of funnel clouds down just to the south of Glenwood. Again, that's between Morris and Glenwood right now, moving northward towards Alex and areas around Elbow Lake. That'll be knocking at your door here within the next 30 minutes. So we'll be keeping an eye on radar, but that line of storms, as it moves northward, that will more than likely affect the FM area. Not with tornadic activity. I do think they'll weaken a little bit as they move northward, but we'll see these waves of thunderstorms through the afternoon. We haven't had any confirmed reports of any large hail. We've had reports of pea to marble size hail across parts of Lakes Country and in the far southern valley as these storms move northward. So again, we'll see these waves of storms. We'll see a break for a little while, and then another round of storms will move in from the south. So this will be ongoing through the afternoon. If you're doing any traveling down towards the cities, tornado watch is in effect. That's where the greatest threat of severe weather is this afternoon, from about Elbow Lake through Alex up towards Brainerd and south towards the cities and east into Wisconsin. So if you're doing any traveling eastward, that's where the biggest threat of severe weather is going to occur this afternoon. And before all is said and done, if you didn't catch it earlier, we're expecting about a half inch to three quarters of an inch of rain here in the FM area. Higher amounts just to our west and south. And as you get out towards Valley City, Jamestown, Bismarck, those areas, 2-3 inches of rain. We've had a few reports from Endon out in the far southwestern corner of the state, south of Dickinson. This is great news for them. They've already picked up about 3 to 4 inches. Areas up around the Bakken, they've picked up about a half inch to three quarters, and they'll pick up all of the western part of the state is going to pick up about another 3/4 of an inch to an inch and a half additional rainfall. So some much needed precip, Bridget, in some of those hardest hit areas of drought, which is good news for out there. Much of the state's going to get some much needed precip. We're just going to see the lesser amounts, up and down the valley and into Lakes Country because it'll be a little more scattered instead of widespread.
Dean, you had a caller wanting to know what the wind might be like now as he's coming from Grand Forks to Fargo, headed south. Maybe a semi-higher profile vehicle, so any advice you want to give there?
Yes, as you get, in fact, let's take a look at this. As you get towards Hillsboro, you're going to start seeing, I guess you could call it a gust front, where as these line of storms move northward, you get a rush of strong winds out ahead of it. So as you're approaching the Hillsboro area, you're going to see those winds increase. And then following the winds, you'll start to see some very heavy rain. We've had wind gusts reported that I've seen up to about 45, 48 miles an hour with this gust front as it comes through out ahead of this main line of storms. So yeah, high-profile vehicles going north to south. The closer you get to Fargo, you're going to hit those stronger winds out ahead of it. Some blowing dust being reported earlier in Yulin. Again, that'll be the case up and down, up and down the valley. So just be prepared for that over the next about 30 minutes. Stay tuned with us this afternoon in case we do have any severe weather. But don't go anywhere for now. The Jay Thomas Show, that's coming up next.